This episode of the Energy Stoners Cafe is sponsored by the Black Arts Matter Network, blackartsmatter.net. Welcome to the Energy Stoners Cafe. My name is Toni Quest, and I'm really happy that you're here. I like to interview the most interesting people I can find on the planet. So grab a cup of coffee, sit down, relax, and listen. You're going to find that these guests are so intriguing, you'll wonder why you didn't know about them before. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Energy Stoners Cafe. I'm Toni Quest, as you know, and I have a great guest this evening. I'm really happy. I know her. I met her recently. I've known her for a few months, and she continues to impress me. Her name is Natasha Cheyenne. I love the name in itself. Natasha, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm very honored and excited to be here.
I'm very excited to have you. Now, I understand that you are a leadership coach. You're also involved in the military. And from what I understand, as being someone from a military family, is that leadership is often what we're taught. Leadership is something that's instilled in people that are in the military. I'm particularly impressed because you're a woman in the military engaged in leadership. Tell me something about that and tell our audience how you got involved in this.
Thank you for that question. Leadership has always been the most important thing to me. I remember reading a book when I was 7 years old about Dwight Eisenhower and thinking, not only was he able to hold these amazing positions, but who he was and the way that he focused on people was so amazing and inspiring that I just wanted to figure out how to get even a little piece of that. When I got older, I decided to join the military, the Army, because that's where Dwight Eisenhower was. And through that, when I went into the military, I was part of the Cyber Corps, and I was able to advance very quickly because the leadership that I had learned and that I'd been so invested in growing up really was able to blossom in that environment. So while I elevated quickly in the military, it put me in these really great positions to empower soldiers and find ways to make their careers and their lives better. And then it ultimately culminated with being able to work at the United States Military Academy at West Point, where I got to not only lead future leaders, which is such a unique position, but also to help and support the cadre, staff, and faculty who are the ones who are building those leaders. So it's helping the people who are helping others. So those two aspects of leadership were so amazing and so unique to my experience. And it was everything I could have hoped that the military and leadership could be.
Now, when you're in the military, how long have you been in the military, number one? And are you still in the military or have you retired yet?
I was in the military for 11 years.
Wow.
And I'm actually separating as of August of this year.
Will there be a big celebration, a party that we will all be invited to?
Well, you know, I love a party. So I'm going to say yes. Let's have a party.
Yes, let's have a party. Well, thank you so much for your service, Natasha. You know, one that's from, I was just telling Jim that I'm from a military family as well. You know, I think it's really impressive that there are so many women getting involved in the military at this point. And that you, as a woman, a young woman, that you're involved in leadership. What is it like for you to work amongst a lot of men, you know, as a woman in the military, which I guess when I grew up was traditionally for men?
Yes. And I would say that percentage-wise, there are still more men than there are women. But in the past 10 or so years, maybe even before that, my experience is just the last 11, but I would say specifically in the last 10 years, the leadership within the Army and the leadership within government has really worked to make those experiences more equitable, both for males and females. So a couple of years ago, they finally started to let females into combat positions. And that's huge because the most senior leaders in the military are typically combat soldiers and combat officers. And by allowing women into these types of positions and even into these roles at the lower levels, it now actually opens it up so that there is a path from start to finish for a woman to ultimately be one of the leaders of the United States Army. So I would say over the past 10 years, they've done a really excellent job with trying to really open that up. So I'm blessed that I got to be there when they were working towards that. And I was also very blessed that I worked among amazing professionals who never treated me like I was different or lesser because of my gender, and who instead just valued the work and the perspective that I brought.
Now, in terms of like being a woman in the military, I know that today, actually, the military just instituted a new rule with regard to certain things. One in particular, which it kind of struck me a little bit, because it's something that has always been an issue in my mind about the military, about sexual assault. They kind of changed their position on that. Have you ever had to deal with, I'm not going to ask if you were assaulted, but do you ever have to deal with that in the military? Because there was a double standard with that. Apparently people, and it's not just women that were assaulted, from what I understand. There are men that have been assaulted. I'm wondering if that has any meaning for you as a leader.
Absolutely. And the military for a long time, in attempting to resolve the issues of sexual assault and sexual harassment, they kept building programs. And then they built programs on top of programs on top of programs. And so within the last few years, they have been more mindful about just revamping or rebuilding on what's there that's working and eliminating the things that don't. Because when they kept building on top of things, it became so confusing that people didn't know who to report to. There were so many loopholes that people could essentially kind of walk away from it. Mm-hmm. And so I appreciate that in the past few years, they've been more mindful about, like, how do we actually fix this program so that people, whoever it is who's assaulted, knows who they can report to and that they can report and that it's not going to negatively impact their career. And so we really shifted from a victim blaming into let's focus on the assistance that the victim needs and also let them choose, do they want this to be investigated or do they just want resources to help them through it, and let them be in control of how that goes and starts to play out.
I have to say that I've noticed that people that really engage in the military, especially someone like you, who's making a career, I mean, 11 years. I heard usually people would do 2 years, 4 years, maybe eight, but you did 11 years of this. And I know that, I don't know what town you're actually from, but I don't know if you're from the Hudson Valley or not, but there's a woman in Peekskill. Her name is Lori Sutton. She also has a home in Brooklyn. She was running for mayor of New York for a second, but she became a brigadier general. And I'm wondering if what you feel about aspirations such as that. And I noticed that I went to a party once on Veterans Day, and when she walked in the room, she was like a celebrity. Everybody just like was like, "Oh, there's Lori," and they just, you know, swarmed to her. And I remember her, what she was saying, big smile on her face. And she really enjoyed, you could see she really enjoyed her station in life. She seems very pleased with her path in life. Do you find that being in the military, would you tell younger people or other people that it's a good place to go, to be involved in with regard to career and getting into a leadership position?
Yes. When you join the military, and specifically I can speak to the Army, one of the unique things is that they don't wait for you to have a certain level of education or experience before you start to get real world on the job training and on the job experience. So someone who's been in the military for 4 years, even if they're very junior, they have 4 solid years of experience. I would also tell someone, if they were thinking about joining the military, that you can go as far as you want. And there are so many resources that if you ever decided to leave the military, if you decided not to stay in until you became a general officer, or you left after 2 years or whatever you want, that to leverage those resources throughout your entire career. And don't wait till you're thinking about leaving. Because when that time comes, when you decide if you're going to stay in, sign a longer contract, accept another promotion, you want to set yourself up and have as many options as possible. And the military offers those internally and externally. And it's just being very smart about it. And then, of course, making the right choice for yourself and for your family.
Yeah, for your family. And I find also with being from a military family, it tends to be a bit of a family affair, and not so much that I'd say with myself and my cousins that we were pushed towards it. But it just seems that, I'll say it this way, in part of the family, the most military part of the family, they're kind of raised that way, you know? So I'm thinking about the fact that my father and my uncles are veterans and my cousins are veterans. I'm not a veteran. I was able to graduate from the Campfire Girls, but I stuck it out. You know, I treated it as a military thing. But I see that there's a different mindset in people from the military that are really in it. I know a lot of people in the military. There is something that's unique. There's a unique personality trait. I'm not going to identify it because I don't think it's appropriate, but I will say that it's a positive trait. And I think it could take that trait. What I've seen in this trait is it takes people to many levels throughout their career. Like you said, you get this solid training. So what do you think about the fact that you, in leadership, I'm just going to out you on this one, is that you are the area director for Peak Skills in the Hudson Valley in New York. You were just, I think, elected or reelected for that. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
And so what are your plans in being the area director? Because I think that Toastmasters is one of those organizations that have tremendous, there is formality just in a meeting, but at the same time, people are talking about different stages of their life or different aspects of their existence. Being a leader at Toastmasters is quite an honor, as I know. And you can actually bring other people into it, into the Toastmasters, because it's a platform to learn about how to communicate, and they encourage leadership. Do you feel that has some play into why you became area director, your military background? Because I've heard your speeches. Very inspiring, very inspiring.
I think that because I tend to trend towards leadership positions, I always want to expand my leadership. But ultimately, leadership is about how much value are you adding to other people. So I had an opportunity to be an officer in a couple of different clubs and hold a couple of those different roles. And then I was talking to a mutual friend of ours, Sarah, through Toastmasters, and I thought, I really want to see how far I can take this. And I joke with her that I'm like, I want to be the president of Toastmasters International, which is only half a joke. But I think that it's such an opportunity, especially of something like Toastmasters, where Toastmasters really shows you that anyone, no matter where you are, can be a great leader through effective communication. So whether you're leading your family, whether you're leading a team at work, or you're leading a project or even an initiative within your community, those tenets of communication are so important for that. And Toastmasters offers that to everyone. So classically, yes, it's a very public speaking, you know, raise a toast to the people around you. But I would say in the last 5 years specifically, it has heavily evolved into how are we using this to build leadership? And how does it benefit you? So I love that with Toastmasters, any person, whether you are terrified of speaking in front of people, which so many people are, or you have been speaking in front of people for years and you're part of the National Speakers Association, every person can benefit from it. Because you also, within Toastmasters, no matter if you're new or you've been around a while, there's mentoring opportunities, there's sponsorship opportunities. There's just really a lot of different aspects of leadership that play out throughout Toastmasters.
Now, speak to me a little bit about the mentorship possibilities and the sponsorship possibilities, and you know that Toastmasters can enable. Because I think a lot of people are interested in that. And I've often thought that young people could benefit. It's almost like I think that people should be required to do 1 year of Toastmasters when they're young so that they can get over that primal fear. It's a primal fear, public speaking. And as an educator myself, I recognize that there are those of us that are not afraid to be in front of an audience, but my understanding is that most people are. Did you ever have a fear of public speaking? You don't seem to be someone that would ever be afraid of anything. So what do you think about that primal fear thing in Toastmasters? You get up in front of people and you talk. You know, they say it's equal to falling, you know, public speaking.
I think so. I've never had a fear of speaking in front of people, but when I was young, my mother instilled a lot of confidence in me. She was an amazing woman. And so I read a lot of books together. I would read the book and then she would have me tell her. And if her friends were there, I would give this like little presentation on the book and what I thought the key takeaways were and how I could use it in my life. And so from a young age, my mother really encouraged me to use my voice. And that was very important to her. Like, you have a voice, you have certain privileges in this world and in this life, and you have to use those because that's how, again, I keep saying it, but that's how you add value to other people. That's anybody who has the ability to speak in front of others, who has the ability to lead, you then need to step into that because that's why you were given that gift. So I know a lot of people do have that, just that fear. I think it's like the second biggest fear in the world.
Yes.
And so it's very, I have not experienced that, but I will say that because I want to do well, because I want to represent Toastmasters or my organization well, I will get butterflies before I speak sometimes. Mm-hmm. But I think that a lot of preparation and just the fact that I care so much, that's why that still happens. But yeah, it doesn't matter. I've spoken in front of audiences of, you know, several thousand people and then audiences of myself and my dogs. And I will say that regardless, it's that preparation and nobody can ever, I would say most people don't really get over that. It's not a fear at that point, just anxiety of wanting to perform well.
Yeah, yeah. That's the fear of flying, the fear of public speaking, the fear of falling, the fear of making a mistake. You know, and I think that is what's interesting in Toastmasters, and I can say this, you know, emphatically, is that the people that are in Toastmasters, the members of Toastmasters, are so encouraging and so embracing. People are interested in hearing your story. And after a while, you realize, I mean, I was just telling Jim that I don't always listen to my speeches afterwards. Once the meeting's over, I'm gone. You know, I'm not really watching my speech after that. And a lot of it is because it's hard. I find it harder to listen to myself speak than to speak. Share with the audience a little bit how Toastmasters helps a public speaker or helps a person who's not a public speaker become a public speaker.
Well, Toastmasters, within a single meeting, it has a lot of opportunities for you to speak, and they're structured very differently. So you have a prepared speech, and that's something that when you decide that you're ready, you sign up for a specific date in the future and say, I'm going to give a speech on this day. And there are pathways which people choose. There's dynamic leadership. There's a total of 11, and I won't list them all, but you choose that pathway, which basically is also you being able to tailor your speeches towards a specific type of speech. And then you get, through that program, you get objectives for each speech. So that way you're not just like, oh, I've got to talk for 5 minutes, because that can be daunting. Sometimes you'll start talking and you think it's been 10 minutes, it's been 4 seconds.
But been there.
But with this, it'll say you need to give a 5 to 7 minute speech. Here are the parameters, but you get to pick the topics. And so you can speak about your own experience. You can speak about things you've learned or something you want to teach the group. And then at the end of a meeting, there's an evaluator. And that evaluator is looking at your vocal clarity, your hand gestures, all the elements of how you are engaging with your audience. So Toastmasters really lets you do many speeches throughout 5 levels within each pathway that allow you to really practice putting together and giving a speech. And then also within a meeting, you have what's called table topics. And table topics is where you will get a question or a topic. And then for the next 1 to 2 minutes, you speak however you want about that topic. And one of the things that I really love about that is that there's an old trick, I guess you could say, about how you overcome saying ums and ahs. And one of the ways is that you have to take a topic and you speak for 1 minute. And the point is to get to 1 minute without saying or ah. And then every time you say it, you're supposed to start the clock over. Now, we don't do that in Toastmasters because sometimes we'd be there for 7 days. but it's that thought of, as leaders, especially as leaders, we are asked questions throughout the day, every day, that we may or may not know the answer to. So it's not about making up an answer in a leadership position, but it's about being able to express what's on your mind about that in the moment and give somebody an answer and a way to move forward. So Toastmasters really enables both of those things. So preparing something that you want to say, but then also off the cuff, how do I respond to something when someone needs me?
And you learn how to think on your feet, you know, which is important in life. You know, sometimes thinking on your feet, you could actually save a life. You never know. I'll get this another story. That'll be another speech. But I think it's important for the people that are listening that are not members. Toastmasters, it sounds like it's very, there's like a very strict protocol, but it's not, doesn't really feel like that when you're in there. The encouragement that an individual gets in joining this group every time they speak is like something I haven't not often experienced, getting that kind of encouragement. The other thing is that I think that if people would just like take a chance and come and just sit and listen. When I first went, there was another member, Lisa Thompson, who's now secretary. She was just elected secretary of our group. She encouraged me to come and just sit in on the group. I have to say that it's very entertaining because more often than not, people are sharing their life experiences. It really can be very inspiring to just sit and listen to the speeches. Not that we want people to only sit there, but it's okay if you do that. I think if people would just, you know, sign up for a meeting and come to a meeting and listen, you're going to find yourself leaving there feeling I find myself highly entertained by going to the meetings because the speeches are just so interesting. I think I just want to give Toastmasters not-for-profit a little bit of a plug on that one because I think that being a member of it in your own community is good for you. It's good for your community. When you first joined Toastmasters, Natasha, were you in the military still, or did you join it before you went to the military?
I was still in the military. So I've actually been a member of Toastmasters for about 18 months.
Mm-hmm. Oh, short time. That's pretty solid. It is. And so when you joined, I guess it was before 18 months, a year and a half. So it was just before the pandemic.
Yes. In fact, my first meeting was their first meeting on Zoom.
Oh, wow. Oh, so you actually never did do the in-person. I understand we're going hybrid soon. So what do you think about the Zoom platform for Toastmasters?
I love it. But I'm a big fan of Zoom in general. I like that they have really, as an organization, they've really worked to up the security issues that were kind of a challenge at first. And then now they've enabled all these other things for people to be able to do. The internal polling, these advanced breakout rooms. They've just done a really good job, I think, with making it so that people really can do their entire job online, which I very much appreciate.
Yeah, and I like that too. And then we have our sergeant at arms, Raphael. He records the every meeting. So if you choose to, you can go back and listen to it again. And I'll say that I don't always do that, but when I do go to the meetings, I really enjoy being there because they're very entertaining. I like the fact that you're given lots of tools to improve yourself. And there tends to be, if you're really involved and you really want to do this and you choose a pathway, you get mentorship. And the mentorship always turns into friendship. At least I think so. It's a beautiful thing to do. What do you think is going to be next for you though, Natasha, as far as your leadership platform on your website? I mean, do you mentor people individually? Do you do small groups? What's your protocol for actually doing what you do?
when I think about my future, if I look at Toastmasters, since we were just saying that, I do plan to continue to move on and up in different leadership positions throughout Toastmasters. For myself, in leaving the military, I plan to work in learning and development, specifically leader development within a larger organization. But then with my passion project, which is what I love to call my website and my coaching and all that good stuff, I do mentorship, I do coaching a couple different ways. So I do mastermind groups. And in these groups, it will be 4 to 6 people who are all kind of at the same level, the same place, same experience. And what I do is each month we get together on Zoom and we will go through a topic, or I will select a book and then we'll have a book or a chapter from that book that we go through. And with that, what we're doing is pulling from our real world experience and also reflecting on things that we could have done better using these new principles that we're learning through this book or through this topic. And then I do also do one-on-one mentoring. Right now, it's mostly with young academics who are working to get into PhD programs. But I'm happy to expand that external to that. And then just regular coaching clients who are really looking to get to different, wider scope, a wider range of leadership opportunities within either their current career field or transitioning to a completely new one.
You know, PhD programs, should I ask you, I will ask you, do you have a PhD?
I do. It's in behavioral modification and development, so psychology.
Wow, behavior modification. Yeah, I know people that could use a little behavior modification.
Most can, yes.
Yeah, decades ago, I took a course in behavior modification to control my overeating. I really did, and it worked. You know, it's funny, you don't realize it, but it became like part of my fiber.
Yes.
The tips that I learned. I guess people will come to you with a problem, it sounds like, and then you come up with a solution.
Yes, and especially within the mastermind groups, there's a lot of, I call it thought partnering. So anybody, it's not just, I don't want to be the quote unquote smartest person in the room. I really want to empower each person in that room to use their voice. And then when it comes to a coaching session, it's typically me acting as more of a soundboard and asking thoughtful questions to help show individuals that they know the answers and they need to get to that place where they have the internal courage to trust those answers and move forward with them. But I do always make sure that people leave a coaching session with action steps. So it's like, what are you going to do within the next 72 hours? What are you going to do within the next week? And then typically sessions are 2 weeks apart. We'll make sure that we follow up on those. And then if there were any interferences that occurred along the way, what happened and how do we mitigate that for the future?
Interesting. That is very interesting. And you know something, I know many people that could probably use your services for behavior modification and coaching as well. Do you have any particular success? I'm not asking you to mention names, but do you have a certain like type of clientele? Do certain people gravitate towards your services?
You know, that's such a good question. I used to think yes, but then as I started to be in groups with other coaches, I really realized that if I decide what kind of a client I want, it's not that I necessarily find like a niche. It's more that I'm limiting them on what it is that I can offer. So I'm not, in those moments, I'm not a therapist, right? And I'm not a counselor. But as a coach, when a client comes to me, the first thing we do is a discovery session. And that's, do we like each other? Do we think this is going to be a good match? And most times it is, sometimes it's not. And then I'll normally refer them to one of my coaching colleagues. Oh. But I would say that when someone comes to me and when it is a good fit, it has been many different types of people. And I make sure that I don't limit it to, oh, I only coach people who are transitioning. No, I will coach someone who is looking to have a leadership coach. And like I said, if there's something that they need that I cannot provide, I have no ego around that. I want people to love the coaching experience. I don't want to waste their time or their money. So I will refer them to a colleague who will then also do a discovery session and see if it's a good match.
Okay, to see if it's a good match. I think I'm, as you're talking, I'm thinking of all the different people I know, all the different problems I have in which I could probably use when how you could actually address, you know, these things. I mean, I know people that could use your coaching in many, many ways. And it's interesting, you said you majored in psychology, you have a PhD, but you're not a psychologist, but you're a behavior modification coach.
Yes.
And it's interesting that you can actually take what you do. And it sounds, I don't want to say it's a one size fits all because it's not, but I imagine you can probably sit in a room and size up a room and know what people could actually use from you or what you could actually do from that for them.
Absolutely. And I think one of the biggest things is that with coaching, there's such a huge emphasis on listening. And we often think like, yeah, I'm a good listener, you know, or whatever. But it turns out that a lot of people, when they are listened to and really someone is listening to them for what they're not saying, listening to what they mean and maybe not just what they say, and then is asking questions to help that person get more clarity on their own thoughts, that really seems to be like the magic key for being able to do coaching across all different types of situations and for all different types of people. Ultimately, people just really want to be listened to and heard. And when that happens, it opens up imagination and creativity and all these other ways of thinking. And it really helps people break down barriers that they have with themselves so that they can move into the next thing that they need to do. So the listening piece, I would say, is kind of that secret sauce, if you will, to being able to work with all types of people.
Well, one thing I know, someone at Postmasters did a speech about the power of silence. And I have an expression that I've always used is that silence can be deafening. Silence can be deafening. You know how it is when there's that pregnant pause in the room, or if you're at a party and someone says something that's like a little questionable, and there's that pregnant pause, and I say, boy, the silence can be deafening. I think that I can imagine, I don't even have to even see you operate, I can imagine that you are extraordinarily effective, because I can sense the military in you. You know, I can feel it.
Oh, thank you.
You know, I can feel it. And I think that definitely is something that would contribute to what you do, because like you said, you learn a lot in the military. And one thing I know about the military is that you learned a lot of, I'm going to use the word self-control. You learn a lot of self-control and you become disciplined on what your task is, no matter what it is. Even if it's about just, okay, I got to go brush my teeth now. I don't know. It also sounds like your mother has a play in this as well. I'm going to ask you who was the most influential, the military or your mother, or maybe they did it together. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I would definitely say, so my mother was the biggest influence, and I would say the best influence across all of my life. And even now, she passed a few years ago, but even now, there are things that I do because my mom told me to do them. And so sometimes people are like, oh, you're such a good person, you did this. And then I just think to myself, oh, I do that because my mom told me to do that. So even now, she still helps me cultivate relationships. She still helps me relate to people because she just ingrained such good habits that now other people get to be the recipients of that, even though she's no longer with us.
Yeah. You know, mothers, I can talk about my mother for hours and hours. I love talking about my mother.
Yes.
Yeah, she died many years ago, but I never stopped talking about her. It's the strangest thing. So what do you do for fun, Natasha? Like when all is said and done, what do you do to have a good time?
There's a couple things. So one of my favorite thing to do is to read. So I love to sit on my porch among all my plants and just read a book. I read about 300 books a year. So
wow.
I'm very interested in getting new perspective. They're mostly nonfiction, but sometimes I'll read fiction. And I love just the perspective, the empathy that you gain, and just this access, this widening your scope, if you will, to other ways of being. So I really love that. And then I love to go on hikes, and anywhere that I can go with my dogs, that's a good day. I've got two little dogs and they are my little travel buddies. So I try to find fun things for us to do on weekends.
That sounds so good, you know. I have to say that you're very impressive. You're more impressive. I knew you were, but you're more impressive than I had anticipated. Seriously. No, it's true. I feel inspired. As a matter of fact, I feel inspired to write this my next book, you know, which I procrastinate,
yes.
You know, and I'm going to ask you at some point, like, what is your tip? What are your tips to avoid procrastination? You don't have to answer now. That will be the next interview because there's a lot of procrastination happening in this world, not just with me, but with other people. I'm sure you see, you notice that people say they want to do X, Y, Z, but then there's also that yeah, but, and they don't do it. You know, and I'm just wondering if there's a cure for that, if there's a remedy, because there's so many of us with so much potential. I see it everywhere. Every time I turn around and people are just, I find that people can live up to more of their potential than they are. I'm not going to diss anybody, but I think we need more of you around. Can you clone yourself? Can we get two of you? Please.
Thank you.
one for my podcast and one for, like, you know, whatever. And maybe three. One is having a good time. You know? Seriously. You know, I think because of what we've all been through COVID, I think that I will just say this. Often you sit and you're alone and there's nothing to do but think. It's to think and you get to know yourself even better. So where can someone find you? Like, why don't you shoot out your email address and your website again so people can find you?
Absolutely. Thank you. So my website is natashashayan.com, and Cheyenne is spelled with an S. So NatashashayenNe .com. And then you can also email me at the same. So natashashayan@gmail.com.
Yes, beautiful name. I knew a little girl years. I didn't know her, but I met a little girl years ago with that name. And sometimes I'm wondering if it was you. Yeah, it was many years ago in New Rochelle. But anyway, with that being said, I want to thank you so much for coming on to the show, Natasha. What a valuable asset you are in what you do. Again, thank you for your service. And I look forward to hearing more speeches and learning more from you. We'll talk more. I promise you that. And I want to just say goodbye to the audience. Thanks for coming to listen to the Energy Stoners Cafe. And as always, I try to get the most interesting people on the planet to engage and share what they do with you. I'll see you next time. Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to the Energy Stoners Cafe.